Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
That's what we say about Darren Dreger, the hockey insider. Nothing else comes close. Hi, Dregs. How are you? And what's happening in the news cycle that may pertain to the Sabres?
It feels like we just kind of rewind and then hit play every single week. And I'm not being disparaging as far as the interest from Buffalo's perspective of trying to get something done. But, you know, it's not like the Sabres are in the futures business per se. Of course, they'd be interested in a top prospect, a high pick, and all of that. But the old cliche, hockey trade, seems to apply. And so the messaging from Adams to all calling or inquiring general managers is, hey, we're open for business, but we're not selling off. So if you've got a piece that you want from our roster, then make a fair hockey offer and we'll have that conversation. And so far it's really status quo. And, you know, not too many GMs are disillusioned or even really disappointed by where we're at. I mean, you know, you're closing in on 50 games of the regular season played, you know, because it's such a tight race, primarily in the East, you know, that's probably gumming things up. And then the ongoing saga that is JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, and the fact that they haven't been able to satisfy any sort of connection there. There are a lot of teams that, you know, kind of remain in the wait and see mode, and that's what Buffalo is waiting for. Let's just see how the dust settles.
Do you consider a player like Bo Byram being involved in a hockey trade because he's still an RFA, or is it more of a, look, you know, he needs a new contract. Would he remain here in Buffalo? Is there where does he fit with the group of defensemen? So is this a hockey trade when you look at Bo Byram, or is this more of a, you know, you're selling an asset and trying to acquire maybe some future things?
Well, I think it has to be more of a hockey trade because, you know, again, you're moving out. A defenseman who on a lot of teams would be, you know, a top or a second pairing guy at worst, right? So I think in the definition of what a top player would be, well, Bo Byram ticks a lot of boxes there. So that's the value that Kevin Adams would be looking for to get back in return. And contractually where he's at, I don't think that the numbers are going to scare Adams and the Sabres away. And I don't think that Bo Byram maybe is. I don't think he's in a position where he can flat out say, look, I'm not going to sign here. I'm not going to extend long term. He doesn't have that set of clout just yet at his position in his NHL career. So I think there are lots of possibilities. And there is a ton of interest in Bo Byram potentially being in play. But, you know, every time I inquire about Byram, I get the same response from Sabre sources. And everybody has essentially got a price tag, but no one has come close yet to, you know, meeting that criteria. So we'll have to wait and see if something further develops before the deadline.
Well, the teams around Buffalo, certainly in the division, a couple going head-to-head tonight, Montreal and Detroit, Ottawa, Boston. If you lump those four into trade talks, trade futures, what their plan might be prior to the deadline, what do you think is going to happen with any or all four of those teams?
Well, I'm more intrigued by what Boston is going to do or not do. I mean, we recently heard from Cam Neely, who effectively is the head of hockey operations there, right? And he basically outlined two paths. You know, one is they get firm into the buying mode. And that seems like a bit of a stretch for me when I look at the Boston Bruins, unless you're moving out pieces that you probably want to try and extend. And you look at Trent Frederick, you look at Justin Brazo. But then you dip into what they have in their prospect pool. And I see that they've got Matthew Patra now up from Providence. And, you know, he's been a real nice piece for him in the last few games that he's played. Beneath Patra, there isn't a whole lot coming. you know, for the Boston Bruins. So what are you using as trade bait here to try and acquire some of these pieces that are going to keep you in the playoff conversation? And then the flip side is, okay, you stand pat and you risk the potential of missing the playoffs. And then what does an offseason look like? You know, with the expectation of that family, the Jacobs family, sure, they want to be supportive of Don Sweeney and everybody there, but their expectation on an annual basis is to certainly make the playoffs and more often than not contend for the Stanley Cup. They weren't able to do that last year. Yeah, they made the playoffs and then they bowed out. They missed the playoffs this year. Then I think we're having a different offseason conversation as to what Boston might do. The other teams, I think that they feel pretty good based on what they've already done. You know, Ottawa for sure. You know, Steve Staios is looking for a little bit more help, particularly on the back end. I feel like Ken Hughes already did that in acquiring Carrier from the Nashville Predators, but he's going to be open for business. So I think teams around that division are basically set, but, you know, the general managers there also willing to do at least a little bit of dabbling to improve their chances.
There was two teams that I was looking at the goalie market, you know, early in the season for some goalie trades. One, they traded both their goaltenders and acquired two of them to Colorado Avalanche. They got Mackenzie Blackwood and Scott Wedgwood. The other one was the Edmonton Oilers, but I think Stuart Skinner's played better. Calvin Pickard's been better. So I don't know that the Oilers are going to do anything. But yesterday we got an injury to Jacob Markstrom. And Sheldon Keefe said, well, he's going to miss quite some time.
Yeah.
So are the Devils potentially now looking at, hey, let's kick tires at least to see what the situation would be, because they have Jake Allen and Markstrom was going to be their savior this year.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, well, I don't get the sense, and in fairness, you know, I haven't dug too deep on Markstrom other than just at the surface and what the Devils might do. But isn't that the reason that you have a Jake Allen and you have a real comfortable tandem, is that when you get into these situations that you can conceivably get over that hump, unless we're talking about long, long term. And I don't get the sense that that's going to be the issue with Jacob Markstrom. So I think it's pretty early. I do believe that, you know, Tom Fitzgerald, the GM of the New Jersey Devils, all over the map. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think that when you think of a big fish like JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, I'm sure that the New Jersey Devils are among the 6-7 teams that continue to circle around, you know, that possibility. So if you're continuing to stay in that conversation, then you're probably not looking for anything more than insurance what already you have in the experience of Jake Allen in goal. If you get to that place where, you know, Markstrom isn't responding and he isn't getting better, and now you're getting real uneasy with your goaltending situation. But, you know, based on the preliminary work that I've done on this to this point today, it doesn't sound like they're headed that direction.
Carolina keeps getting linked with Vancouver.
Yeah.
Vegas seems to just, you know, not be on everyone's radar, and then they always make the big move.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. What about those two teams in particular? I mean, Vegas, I only bring it up because they've dropped 6 of their last 7, and we know that that never sits well in Vegas, obviously.
And now William Karlsson is out, so that's added to the maybe need in Vegas for sure.
Well, week to week too, right? And and so how do you dissect that? Does week to week turn into months? And, you know, because we are a distance away from, you know, the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think that that's the first reaction that most people had when they saw the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, tweet out earlier that William Karlsson is week to week with that price tag. I mean, there's considerable relief there if it is worst case scenario for him. You know, look, Kelly McCrimmon has a clear history of being very aggressive. And with the support of ownership there, you know, their goal is the same every year. From the moment they stepped into the league, it was, boom, let's get at it. Let's try and win a Stanley Cup. So every resource there is explored and is invested. And they'll be no different to the approach of McCrimmon and George McPhee and company now. But in an exchange that I had recently with Kelly, And it was about something Ray Ferraro and I talked about on the podcast. And, you know, I, you know, jokingly refer to McCrimmon often as a mad scientist. And Kelly and I go back to his assistant coaching days, you know, in the Western Hockey League. So we're talking 30 plus years. So he knows my style of humor or attempt. But I don't think he found it amusing because especially this year, when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, everything they've done and how they've structured their roster to this point of the season, Karlsson aside and this losing skid aside, has been by design in putting them in a real good footing and a sound place. Not to say that they don't have needs. And again, assuming that Karlsson is back healthy enough in time or prior to the playoffs where they can't fully invest that money. I still think that Vegas is looking for a forward and maybe two forwards, but I don't get the sense that they're swimming in a deep pool here. Malkin? I think they're more looking
Would
for
they
deep.
Take Malkin?
I doubt it, but you never know. I know that, look, not that Evgeny Malkin can't contribute at a high level at this point of his NHL career. But I do know, you know, McCrimmon is a super competitive guy. And particularly if you're looking for a bottom six forward, he would want that player to play a pretty aggressive game.
The Calgary Flames are hosting the Sabres tonight. Yeah. Dregs, we had a conversation about what are they going to do before this deadline. Should they buy? Should they sell? Should they stand pat? Can they even consider buying at this time? Like, there's a lot of things that are happening in Calgary. But what do you think they do? Do you think there is a situation where they acquire, you know, a couple of players to make that push to guarantee themselves a playoff spot?
Well, that's their hope and that's their intent. And they feel like, you know, they've got enough time here remaining in the regular season that they can make a push. I mean, they're not what they were to start the season, but I don't think any of us who know that roster well would look at it and expected them to be able to sustain the way they were playing in the first quarter of the regular season. But they do have some good stories, and they've got some good, young, interesting prospects and players that are showing that there's some NHL quality there, right? So I think that there is an appetite to add, but an affordable add. And sure, Craig Conroy is looking for, you know, a top six centerman. Well, there aren't too many contending teams that are in the market for a 1-2 or a 3C. You know, that's just the reality every year at this time. That's what we go through. Yeah, I'd like to add a top four defenseman. I'd sure like to get a number two or a number three center. But again, what's the affordability of that? And how much of Conroy's future is he going to have to invest to make a deal like that happen? But I do think that reward probably isn't the right word or term, but I think he would like to give this group a bit more of an opportunity to get closer to the cut line and lock down a spot if possible.
You definitely dodged Carolina because I inadvertently lumped it into Vegas. Yeah. So please elaborate on Carolina. And if you have a second, we'll get back in the Zegras news cycle now has returned and played one game for Anaheim. I only bring it up because, again, the Ducks find themselves losers of 7 of 8.
Sure. And look, the Trevor Zegras file for me is always open. It's always open until, you know, Pat Verbeek flat out comes out and says, nah, we're not doing that. How can he? I mean, given where the Ducks are and, you know, the curiosity of the trade, was it the Fowler trade to St. Louis where they basically came out? No, sorry. It was the signing where they deferred the money to Frankie Vetrano.
Yeah.
And came out and said, well, we intend on being a cap spending team in the not too distant future, in helping to describe why they were able to convince Vetrano to do what they did. So you look at that, and now you look at the reality of where they're at, and they're still very much a building team. And I think that Zegras has made strides. I do. But I don't see him as being a Pat Verbeek type of player. And I'm never going to see that in Trevor Zegras. Doesn't mean that he is an exciting talent and that there are general managers and head coaches out there who would like to get, you know, their hand on that skill set and try to develop that more and worry less about the defensive side of his game. So I think the calls are always going to come in. So that one is to be determined. And I'm always going to be skeptical around Zegras. Back to Carolina, though, Duffer. I think that Carolina is still one of those teams that we have to keep open with JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks. I wouldn't position them as a front runner. I think it's hard to say. I think that they're most definitely one of the primary tire kickers. It was assumed that Marty Natchez would have to go out as part of that trade. And that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me from Carolina's perspective, just based mm-hmm. how productive he's been. But more and more, certainly this week anyway, I'm hearing Kotkaniemi's name and other pieces. And if I'm Carolina, sure, I'd move that. I mean, when you look at the Kotkaniemi contract alone, it would make sense why they would want to move that out. But is there a fit there? Based on the dialogue that's been ongoing for several weeks, if not months, between Tom Dundon, now Eric Tulsky, and the Vancouver Canucks, I don't know. You know, maybe at some point, everybody in Vancouver just goes weary and they say, okay, well, let's just take a deal. Who's got the best offer on the table? Maybe that's how this saga ends, and maybe that's how Miller ends up in Carolina, but right now I think it's more just circling.
Dregs, let's do a little this or that press release edition. Which one had the most embarrassing press release? The Rangers, after Tom Wilson manhandled Artemi Panarin a few years ago, and they put the press release out, the letter, and it ended up, you know, Jeff Gordon and John Davidson got fired later and everything. Or the Edmonton Oilers with their press release, and we're supporting McDavid, and we're like our fans disappointed in the 3-game suspension. Like, that was an embarrassing press release. So this or that, which one has the most embarrassing press release, the Rangers or the Oilers?
Well, probably the Rangers, just because of the disarray that followed, right? I mean, that whole thing was just madness. You know, and it was fully orchestrated by ownership in New York. I can appreciate, you know, the level of disappointment and angst inside the head offices of the Edmonton Oilers. And a lot of that was probably coming from ownership as well. Although, again, based on, you know, the feedback that I was getting directly from sources within Edmonton, they didn't expect it to be anywhere near three. I think they actually thought it was a one gamer. I felt it was two, and then three comes out, and there's all of this crazy and wild reaction. The one that got me, frankly, had nothing to do with the statement. Corey Perry coming out and talking about how the league has got to do a better job of So what does that mean when he absolutely ran over John Tavares years ago? He should have got a 20 gamer. Like, what are we talking about here?
It was accidental.
Anyway. And in part, I believe it was. He didn't mean to knee Tavares in the head, but, you know, are you just sort of protecting star players, or is it across the board? Like, anyway, the whole saga, good the whole thing has been ridiculous.
Great point on Corey Perry. When he spoke out, I'm like, wrong guy.
All right, well, we'll table concession food on ice for another date.
I look forward to it. Nachos.
First assist of the year. All right, Dregs, thank you.
All right, guys, have a good weekend.
Sabres Live wraps after this.